I fundamentally believe marketing's job is full cycle. It is to think about from the very top of the funnel to the middle of the funnel to the bottom of the funnel and after they become customers as well.
There are secrets out there, guys, performance marketing secrets, and knowing just one or two of them can absolutely light up your funnels. Let's go. This is the Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris McKinnick. Join me as I uncover the secrets of the world's most elite CMOs marketing leaders. The Revenue Driven CMO is sponsored by Web Mechanics, the AI-driven performance agency that makes you smarter. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO. Boy, do we have a good one for you today. Very exciting guest who is a powerhouse in the tech world, bringing over three decades of experience to the table. He's played pivotal roles at high-growth companies like Conga, which is a $400 million software company, as well as NICE in Contact, where he was instrumental in growing revenue from, get this, $260 million to over $800 million in a span of just 4 or 5 years. Now he's CMO at SalesLoft, a company that, for many of you, I'm sure you're familiar with, needs no introduction, that's trailblazing the AI-powered revenue workflow platform space, and is currently used by thousands of top revenue teams around the globe, including Google, 3M, IBM, Shopify, Square, Cisco, and many more. And with the history of innovation and history of scaling companies that our guest brings today, I am super excited to dive in with him. But first, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Mr. Randy Littleson. How are you, Randy?
I'm great. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Nice introduction. Very kind of you. Appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. Well, you earned every syllable of that. I mean, amazing resume that you've got. I'm so excited to learn some of your secrets. And you know, we love to lead with the value and give our listeners what they came for first and foremost. So why don't you go ahead and share with everybody, like, what is one of your biggest secrets to success?
Yeah. You're right. I've been doing this for a long time. And I think the most important thing, and I actually love the title of your podcast itself, because I think in it is the secret. And the secret from my perspective is around goal alignment. You talk about the revenue-driven CMO. I found too many cases where the leaders of marketing aren't tied to the same goals as the rest of the revenue organization, right? Sales, the customer service team, and so on. And that leads to all sorts of bad things. And I think the secret is, first and foremost, goal alignment. Marketing teams are a catalyst for growth. And that growth needs to come in the form of bookings and pipeline and revenue. Because at the end of the day, those are the metrics that matter most to organizations. And I think aligning to those goals changes the dynamic with all of those other functions. It changes the perception of marketing in the boardroom with the rest of the executive leadership team. And it certainly changes the dynamic with the revenue team, right? To be shared around those goals. So the first thing I would say is you've got to be aligned around goals. That immediately then leads into an operational framework tied to those goals, where I think it's very important for marketing to have a plan that they are executing to. Because if you don't have a plan and you don't communicate that out to the revenue team, and that plan is not aligned to those goals, marketing organizations end up getting into random acts of marketing. And you're all of a sudden you're spread all over the place, right? And a lot of what we're doing at SalesLoft ties to this, right? We are fundamentally about bringing together the sales and marketing organization. We're fundamentally about empowering revenue teams. And so everything that I share is core to what we're doing internally at SalesLoft as well. That's going to continue to drive the great growth that the company has seen. So that would be my secret, right? Alignment around goals and then an operating plan tied to those goals that's built with sales, communicated to sales, and really drives the orchestration between the two teams to achieve those revenue outcomes.
Yeah. And you know, you said a lot of really interesting things there. I want to unpack some of them. I think that goal alignment, I'd like to like understand an example of like what alignment doesn't look like versus what alignment does look like. But one thing that jumped out from me to what you were saying about random acts of marketing, I think a lot of it comes down to communicating the plan, right? Because every marketing executive, even if their goals are not tied to revenue, would probably say, we have a plan, right?
Yep.
However, just because you have a plan doesn't mean that other people are aware of your plan. And like, even if you have a good plan and you're executing against that plan, if others aren't aware of it, or like if they're not seeing, you know, signs of success, they're going to start asking for stuff and telling you things to do. And then that's where random acts of marketing come in, right? Like random acts of marketing isn't always a voluntary thing. A lot of times it's like the revenue leaders or the executives just aren't seeing what they want to see, or, you know, otherwise it's just not visible to them. And so therefore they're like, hey, you know, what is this team doing? Let's go to some events, guys. Let's publish a white paper about this, guys. Like, let's do that. And they just start flinging orders out. So I think that communication is really key, because it's like, even like, let's say in a world where your goals are aligned and you do have a plan, but you're missing that communication piece and people aren't aware of your plan, random acts of marketing is what ensues.
Exactly right. And I think you hit on two things in there, right? One is, one of the best ways to communicate your plan is to build it with sales input to begin with. Because if they have a stake in it and they're involved in it, then by definition, you're doing communication as part of the planning function. Yeah. And then obviously you have to carry that through to enablement, communication, everything else. So I think that is one piece of it. Don't build it in isolation, build it with input. That does not mean you have to do everything that sales says that they want to do. Right. I half joke about this, right? My long-term perspective is, if you ask 100 salespeople what a good marketing activity is, 100 of them will tell you an event. And no good marketing plan is events only, even though events are important. So one, build it with them. That helps foster the communication that you hit on, which is absolutely so important. The second thing is, if that plan is clearly tied back to those aligned goals, it makes it a lot easier when you do communicate for them to listen and pay attention and engage with it. Right. Yeah. If it's not tied to those goals, then they're going to be turned off, right? Because it doesn't directly apply to them, and it's not directly, in their wheelhouse of what's going to help them be successful. And are they good sales and marketing organizations? Marketing's job is to help sales be more successful. Sales' job is to help marketing be more successful. And if you can foster that, then you've got a flywheel that starts to work, and it starts to become very powerful.
Hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours, even if you're already a client. If you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision. Interesting. Yeah, I want to come back to that in a second, because it's pretty obvious the ways that marketing can help sales be more successful. But I am curious about how sales can help marketing be more successful. Some ideas, but let's get back to that. But before we even get there, let's suppose that there's a CMO listening, right? And let's say that, or even a CEO, and let's say that they're in a scenario where they have goals, they're not necessarily tied to revenue, or they're certainly not aligned with the sales team's goals. How would you get from that state of being to a more aligned, more revenue focused state of understanding?
I walked into a scenario when I was at InContact, when I joined InContact. So as you mentioned, so InContact, my first year there, we were about $260 million in revenue. We were a public company. We got acquired by NICE, which was also a public company. When I first walked in, one of the things I did was I did sort of a listening tour, and I went around and met with a lot of sales leaders, individual salespeople and everything else. And they all commented that my predecessor had done a very nice job building the brand and everything else, but there wasn't always alignment around the goals. And one, we weren't talking about the goals that mattered to them. We were talking about leads, and they cared more about pipeline and bookings and stuff like that. And then secondly, when we were talking about goals, even when we did align them, they weren't the same numbers. That's not going to work, right? If our, you know, if sales needs to produce 10 million in pipeline and you're talking about 5 million in pipeline, you're misaligned yet again. So
yeah,
what I did was by the end of my first quarter, I had taken 100% of the discretionary bonus compensation for the marketers, which was in a bonus plan that we had that was tied to discretionary goals. I made 100% of that tied to two metrics. Pipeline and bookings, the exact same numbers, the exact same goals as the sales team.
Mm-hmm.
And most marketing teams don't have a goal tied to bookings, but I wanted that because I did not want us saying, well, we generated a pipeline. It's your fault you didn't close it. We threw it over the wall. And it's because I fundamentally believe marketing's job is full cycle. It is to think about from the very top of the funnel to the middle of the funnel, to the bottom of the funnel, and after they become customers as well. Yet another thing that SalesLoft is working on, right? Both internally as well as with our products, it's to enable that orchestration, that collaboration between teams, full life cycle, right? Mm-hmm. So that we can drive more, you know, repeat and ongoing business. So that was the first thing that I did, and it changed every conversation from that point forward, right? Yeah. How we built our plans and how we built goals for, I'll use events, right? Which is, you know, that favorite activity of most sellers. You know, we started to jointly come up with goals for those events in terms of how much pipeline we wanted, not just how many people were going to scan in the booth. It really was impactful to the business. So it's just one example, but I think that's a way that you take it and you actually make it real. You tie it to marketing compensation as well. And then what I did was in every all hands in team meetings, everything, I brought those goals up and I shared them with everybody and made sure that they were front and center and everybody knew how we were doing towards those goals that mattered, the exact same goals that the sales team was worried about.
Yeah, no, that's so powerful. You know, Charlie Munger passed not too long ago, and I've always been very familiar with Warren Buffett, not so much with Charlie, but I kind of knew that he was the quiet genius sort of behind the scenes, yep. Which he is. So I listened to his updated version of Poor Charlie's Almanac, which is essentially like a series of talks that he gave. But a common thread was the power of incentives. Like he harped on and on about just how powerful incentives are in changing people's behavior. So that's a great piece of advice right there. It's like just literally take whatever variable comp you've got, whatever bonuses or whatever upside potential, and just tie it to that. I find myself thinking, as a marketer myself, it happens a lot of times, almost on a daily basis, where it's like, you know, you're delivering leads which are deemed good by all the metrics, by the firmographics, by the title, you know, like, they might even have a couple meetings, but then they fizzle. What are some ways you think that marketers can involve themselves or like impact deals that are further along?
I think one of the first things that I mentioned earlier is going back to this notion that today, especially in the B2B sense, right, is people don't buy, companies don't buy, teams buy. It is a buying group, buying committee, whatever term you want to use. That's who buys today when it comes to software and that. So that understanding is important. In fact, I've been driving this here at SalesLoft ever since I got here. And, you know, our job is not to get things into the funnel and then walk away and move on to getting more things into the funnel. Our job is to be engaged throughout that entire buying process. So one of the things that we want to do is that if it's a stage four opportunity, for example, we should jointly be looking at, have we engaged all the buying committee members that we know we need to engage for a successful deal? We really want to get to the point that we have a prescriptive understanding of what makes a deal successful. We're actually building this into our product as well, where our product is going to leverage AI, leverage insights about deals in the past, and help you uncover when you've got exposure, when you've got risk to a deal successfully closing. And one aspect of that is you haven't engaged the full buying committee, or you haven't engaged them enough. Marketing can provide air cover to that, right? So sales may be meeting with, let's say, three of the core people on the buying committee on a regular basis and have anecdotal interactions with others. Marketing should be engaging them all the way to the finish line. And so that's one huge area that I think we can work together. And it all comes back to orchestration.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all about the revenue team orchestrating the set of activities in order to move deals forward to closure. And then full life cycle. After they become a customer, marketing's job doesn't end. We should be helping them onboard, helping them get access to best practices and joining our community and leveraging resources that we have to get to value. Because we all know in the SaaS business, right, it's about ongoing value and how do you retain those customers. And then obviously, if you can get them to value from what they initially purchased, then you earn the right to talk about them becoming a reference and or buying more from you. That entire life cycle should have marketing engagement. I just see too many marketing organizations. Our job is to get something into the top of the funnel, and then sales or service carries on from there. And if you think full cycle and you think about bookings and revenue as the ultimate metrics, we are engaged all the way through that and orchestrating with the various teams in order to have the coverage that you need in order to be successful.
Man, you are over-delivering here, Mr. Littleson. This is even more valuable than I would have thought, because even some of our more sophisticated clients who they are very concerned with revenue and with bookings, there's still a tendency to focus the vast majority of the time on filling the funnel and, you know, maybe at the early stages. But this concept that you're describing of like air cover and following deals all the way through, that can be really, really powerful, because the fact is, especially for the silent and less visible members of the buying committee, if you can get them to consume some of your content, the chances of them buying go up dramatically, right? Like in other words, if you can get some of your best useful, you know, how to maximize time to value kind of content in front of the CEO or the CFO, even though they may not be joining calls, the chances of them buying go up probably fivefold, right? Imagine a world where they spend a few minutes consuming like one of your more impressive pieces of content because you have been proactive in getting that piece of content in front of them. And your competitor didn't do it, like you're going to win that deal every time.
Yeah. Let me take that one step further. In our business, right, we sell predominantly to a couple of key personas, right? So it's RevOps or SalesOps, depending on what you call it. The sales leader, the marketing leader, those are the primary personas that we're selling to, given the value of the offering that we have. But in today's buying environment, especially, right, there's two other groups that are involved in every single transaction. But to your point, they may not be as visible. They may not be in all the meetings. That's IT and finance.
Yeah.
I affectionately call them the anti-buyers, right? Yeah. Because they're not usually initiating or driving a project, but they can sure kill a project.
Right.
And
can't
so
say yes,
if you
can say no. Right.
Exactly right. So if you think about them being a part of the buying committee and a part of the buying process, to what extent can marketing, you know, if they're on their own looking for content in that in order to answer their questions, right? The IT organization's worried about uptime. They're worried about security and reliability and governance and things like that, right? To what extent can you provide content to them in a self-service way that allows that engagement for them to get the questions answered that they need answered in the buying process when they may not be always as visible or directly in a buying process?
Yeah. And I'm curious that, I mean, that makes a ton of sense. I'm thinking logistically, like, how would we even activate or engage those? Like, there, I mean, you could just grab the IT leader's email and send them an email. That might be a little direct. But how do you guys, like, go about, like, in terms of the channels, for instance, or, like, actually activate, like, finding that person and activating them if they're not already in CRM? Like, is that, that might be too micro for this, but are you, is that like a LinkedIn thing, or is that something that the sales team normally would uncover and be like, hey guys, like, we need to add this person to a campaign?
Yeah. Well, the first thing you said, I think I totally agree with it. Sales and marketing working together, right? And it's that orchestration that we talk about of how do they orchestrate their activities and that. And it's the fundamentals that you talked about, right? It is, where do those people go to get their information? Some of it could be on your website. You just need to have that content. And you need to make it accessible for them so that they can get their questions answered. You know, sometimes it's going to be in a meeting where they're going to ask and you can point them to stuff. Sometimes it's going to be where they're going to do the research on their own. Sometimes, you know, they're going to go to a third-party review site, for example, to get some of this information, depending on what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is through your customer references, which is another key part of this, right? Which goes back to that, you know, marketing full life cycle that we talked about earlier. So, it can be a variety of different ways, understanding your buyers, where they go for the information, and then making sure that you're building a content plan that fits all of those. So we look at content as by persona, by buying stage, knowing that they all have different questions that they want answered at various stages of the process. You got to build out a content plan for that. And then to your point, you've got to get it in front of them in the different places that they want to consume it. And that can vary by persona. And certainly there's different channels out there of how you get that content in front of them.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm envisioning a LinkedIn ads campaign structure that's like broken out by pipeline phases. Yep. And then within those pipeline phase campaigns, you might have like little groups or ad groups or whatever LinkedIn calls them, the subsets that are broken out by persona. And just basically, it would be really sexy. Like serving up some of that best content paid capacity. That would be super, super duper next level. I'm curious, you don't have to answer this if you don't want, but how do you structure your marketing team? Like, it would seem, based on this conversation, that it might make sense to do it by deal stage, like have just basically like a really upper funnel team that's working to get net new visitors and names, and then like a more of a mid funnel team that works to like nurture and convert those leads, and then maybe like a deal team representing the marketing side that's working like on active deals, potentially even a customer like a few marketing people focused on customer success and like maximizing time to value, upsell, cross sell type of thing. How do you think?
Yeah, you hit on a couple of key themes, dimensions. You should know that, first of all, my perspective on org structure is, at any point in time, there is multiple answers to this question. None of them are perfectly right. None of them are perfectly wrong. You're just optimizing for something, suboptimal for something else. And so for us, we do have people that focus on that post-customer relationship that you talked about. And then we have customers, we have people that are focused on getting people into the funnel and then managing them through. Right now, we have an initiative driven around integrated campaigns and how we structure our campaign structure. We have always on campaigns, and then we have different types of campaigns. And those people are thinking about more all the way through the funnel as they execute those campaigns, in part to make sure that we have a good experience continuity. We've been a little siloed in the past, and that can lead to a choppy experience. And so as we think about campaigns, we are thinking about that experience going through. But it's a little bit campaign centric in the way that we're thinking about it today.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a ton of sense. Man, what a fascinating world we live in, especially like with AI coming at all these different things and all of the data that's flying around, all the signals coming through, and the ability to like start to use AI to at least interpret and tell you what to do next. It's really exciting time to be alive as a marketer.
It's an incredibly exciting time to be alive as a marketer. And I think it's both a threat and an opportunity. is often the case. If you look at the innovation that we're doing in our products, for example, we've got AI throughout everything that we're doing, right? And you hit on a key point, right? If you think about it from the buying process, so flip it around, right? We talk about enabling revenue teams, but you think about it from the buying process, it's hard to buy software nowadays too,
yeah.
Right? And so that then translates into a very difficult selling situation on the other side of it. And so if you're a B2B seller today, and increasingly you're a full lifecycle seller, right? You have to generate pipeline, you have to move things through, you have to get them across closure. And a lot in the SaaS world, you've got to worry about them post-close as well, right? Getting them up to value, and you may have compensation tied to that, and because it's tied to retention and everything else. It's really hard if you think about the buying committees and how much anonymous stuff researchers, buyers can do and everything else. AI is a perfect application for that. One, because it can analyze a lot of data and help prioritize the set of actions you should take. Because for every opportunity that I'm working, some of them very top of funnel, some of them middle, some of them bottom, right? All over the place. Every opportunity, there is a multitude of complexities. There's a buying committee. We talked about engaging all of them that I need to do. There's a set of next actions that I need to do. How do I help make order from this and prioritize the actions that are going to help me achieve the business outcomes that I want? It's a great application for AI. And we've got purpose-built conductor AI, we call it, that is embedded into our product. That is that prioritization engine. It's taking signals from your buyers. It's taking first and third party signals. It's taking insights that it grabs from the process and the results and the outcomes that you've delivered. And it's feeding all that into a prioritization engine. And it's helping to tee up for the reps at any one point in time. What are the next things that you should do? And then it's helping you actually execute on those. So it's automating them as well, because we've done a lot of research in looking at the percentage of time that reps are actually spending working deals with all the administration and CRM systems and meetings and everything else. It's just woefully too little. And so to the extent that we can automate that through generative AI and automation of transcripts from call recordings and everything else, we can free up time. So we can prioritize and we can help you drive action and automate the steps that you need in order to achieve the business outcomes that you're trying to deliver for the organization and for yourself personally.
That sounds lovely. And that's probably a good seg into SalesLoft. Before we go there, I just want to summarize for all the marketers, the marketing execs, even some of the salespeople, what Randy is suggesting, and forgive me if I butcher this, you can fill in any gaps, but is essentially to volunteer, raise your hand. Your CEO will love this. Raise your hand and volunteer to have your incentives and your OKRs adjusted to align not just a little bit with sales, but perfectly with sales, and broaden your view so that you're both, you know, looking at the same exact targets. Step one, and then step two, work with your sales team to develop that plan. Step three is communicate consistently, almost to the point of over-communicating that plan, so that you can avoid random acts of marketing, help your sales team really to hit those goals, and subsequently your sales team will help you as well to hit your goals.
Beautiful summary. I think at the end of the day, it's one set of goals with different teams orchestrating their specific unique talents towards achieving those goals.
Yeah. I love that. That's brilliant. Very well said. I think incredibly valuable to anybody that's listened. One last question before we seg over to talk SalesLoft is, so suppose that you are that marketer or that, you know, marketing leader that is already there, more or less. You're already helping the sales team. What can you ask of your sales team that would help you? Or like, how do the best sales leaders help the marketing team?
Yeah, I think the first thing is feedback. What's working, what's not working, what's resonating, what's not resonating, right? That's on messages, on programs, on execution, everything else. That's a lot easier to do if we have one set of goals, right?
Yeah.
Because you're all rowing in the same direction. So I think the first is feedback. I think the second is if you built that plan with aligned goals in that, now you can hold them accountable and ask for their engagement in making them successful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this can, I'll use the event again, because it's a very simple one to think about, right? We go to an event and we got people to follow up on. They need to be accountable for following up.
Yeah.
Because otherwise this is, but if you've built that plan together and it's aligned towards, you have pipeline that lead to bookings plan, the expectations out of those things, that becomes an easier conversation to have. So yeah. I think things like that, I think reference programs is another great one, right? Salespeople love to withdraw from the program. I need a reference. Somebody will talk to a prospect of mine and say good things. But there's actually a good give and get there. Because I always differentiate references by sales references versus marketing references. A sales reference is willing to do a call, do you a favor, and talk to a prospect. A marketing reference is willing to speak at a conference, do a case study, right? Something that's more mass, that gives you more leverage out into the marketplace. And the reality is, again, you're going back to those shared goals towards the, all of those are valuable, but we need to work together. Right. Yeah. Every rep can contribute into that reference program and then cash out things that they need to leverage for their success. And that should be a joint effort again, right? That yeah. all geared towards those common objectives. So I think if you build it right, if you build the joint plan, if you build around those aligned goals, everything else, it gives you permission to then ask for tighter engagement, more participation, more working together to achieve the results that you both want.
Yeah. Last question. I'm sorry. I'm just having so much fun with this. So, in our world, the magic happens the most when you've got a media buyer and a designer or like a creative leader, working at the hip. Like they're talking every single day. The creative team is seeing, you know, in real time what's happening in platform. The media buyers are, you know, like participating actively in the ideation for new ads. Angles and concepts, right? That's when the magic really happened, like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen magic. What does it look like in the high, like the highest performing sales and marketing or revenue teams that you've seen? What does the interaction look like between the leaders on the sales team and marketing team?
I think one of the first things that you see is when you come together to solve a problem, each person leads with what they need to do better. Rather than what you need to do better. And it's a pretty profound change, right? When you come to the table and saying, look, we've diagnosed this problem, and here's the things that we're going to step up to that we need to do better. You'll lead with that versus, by the way, we've diagnosed this problem. If you guys could do this, this, and this, it really changes the dynamic and the collaboration between the teams. You know, you hit on a very important point about the teams working together. And again, the earlier you've got that engagement, the earlier you've got the alignment, the planning and everything else, it facilitates so much downstream that's so much better. And again, I think how you show up, if you have aligned goals, it's around getting to the root cause of the problem and fixing it. It's not around pointing the fingers because that can impact my goal. It's all of our goals. And if you have misaligned goals, a lot of times people want to look good. So it leads to the wrong behaviors. If you got the same goal, it's we're all in this together. So it doesn't really matter where the issue is. We just got to roll up our sleeves and get the thing done. And it does change the discourse in a pretty profound way, I found.
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. It's kind of like a how to win friends and influence people sort of a lesson is like, you know, showing empathy and respect and kind of admitting some of your own shortcomings makes others a lot more willing to do that. Whereas the classic like dysfunctional sales and marketing is like, we're sending you leads. Why aren't you closing them? Oh, these leads. Like, why don't you guys get it together?
That's exactly right. Yep.
All right. Cool. Well, let's talk about Sales Loft. I'm a fan. I'm familiar. But I know you guys have been doing some moving and shaking. But could you give us like an overview for folks that aren't as familiar as me?
So if you're not familiar with Sales Loft is technology for revenue teams. And very important, the team itself, the revenue team. And we make it possible to prioritize and take actions, close more business. Yeah. And we talked a little bit about that earlier. We leverage a lot of data. AI is foundational to what we do. We've got a lot of innovations around AI. And it's, you know, used from companies of small sizes up to large. You may have seen that we announced back a couple of months ago a very strategic relationship with IBM. So not only are we going to technically embed Watson X in to leverage as part of our AI platform, but they have extended beyond an initial group, which was in their digital business, to now all their global sellers. So over 30,000 sellers are now are going to be using SalesLoft within IBM. I have a great working relationship with IBM, a very, very smart organization, very thoughtful about how they evaluated the technologies. They had access to every technology out in the marketplace. And fundamentally, what it came back to them, which we find time and time and time again, if you really want to drive change, if you really want to impact your sales organization's ability to hit their outcomes, you've got to implement a workflow and you've got to standardize and make consistent the processes and how you achieve your selling. And SalesLoft is phenomenal at helping to do that. And as we talked about earlier, it not only helps prioritize the actions you need to take, but then it helps execute those. It drives a workflow. It drives a process with you in order to execute those different changes. And so that's what SalesLoft is all about today. And we recently acquired Drift. And so for many people on your in your audience, I'm sure you've probably heard of Drift because,
of course,
you know, Drift is sort of driven and created this market around conversational intelligence automation. And they continue to innovate in a phenomenal way. But fundamentally, what we saw was this common desire to connect the sales and marketing functions to help deliver these outcomes. And through personalization and through a better buying experience, Drift helps now us achieve this overall vision that we wanted. And so they've just released some recent innovations. They Forrester Wave just came out. They're a leader in it multiple years in a row. They just continue to innovate in a great way. And we think it fits in beautifully with our mission to help revenue teams drive the business outcomes that we can help in.
No, that's huge. That's awesome, man. And
as a marketing person, I personally love it, right? So now, you know, we can become best in class at not only leveraging SalesLoft, you know, between the sales and marketing teams, but also Drift between the sales and marketing teams. And so it's sort of, you know, absolutely love it from my chair.
Yeah, and that was quite recent, right?
Like very recent. Yep.
Three months or so ago.
Just in February. Yeah. So very, very recent. So we're obviously building the integration. We're going to be able to take signals from the Drift product and then feed them into our AI engine for this prioritization and everything else. So it's really, really exciting, the innovation that our teams, you know, that's the other thing that you notice about SalesLoft, right? The quality of the team that we have is just exceptional, right? We've got David O'Brien now, who's the CEO, just a phenomenal track record. He had been at Yammer. He had been at Salesforce. We've got Ellie Fields, who heads up the product organization. She had been at Tableau, then was at Salesforce. Just driving incredible innovation there. Mark Nemec has just come over to lead up our revenue organization. He was at Salesforce for many, many years. We've got Sam Loveland, who heads up our customer organization. She was at ServiceNow. Just phenomenal talent, top to bottom in the organization, and just incredible amount of innovation coming out of the teams. It's really, really exciting.
That's super cool. So SalesLoft, essentially, like what I was alluding to earlier, wouldn't it be great if there was something to just like tell you exactly what you needed to do and when?
That's like, right.
That's basically SalesLoft for the sales team. Then you've got Drift, which historically has been focused around conversational intelligence. So is it and sold primarily into the marketing orgs?
Yep.
So is it the type of thing where historically your main persona was in the sales org, now all of a sudden you're selling both into the marketing org and the sales org? So it's kind of all coming together in a way. Like
Exactly right. And it's all about bridging these two functions to be one revenue team around one set of goals and to drive better outcomes. And we think the bridge function between those is increasingly RevOps or a sales ops function. And so all three of those personas, as I mentioned earlier, are critical to the sale. And, you know, we got phenomenal response when we first announced this to the Drift customer base. They said, oh my gosh, we look at Drift totally differently now, right? Because that ability to connect those, we've had an integration with Drift for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But the vision to integrate those even more tightly, right? You mentioned they were all about this great buyer experience and engaging people on the website and delivering them a personalized experience. Well, how is that not a function of the overall selling process that we're trying to automate and prioritize and help teams execute to be more proficient at? That's the natural part of it. And so now we're able to bring those together in a more integrated overall offering.
Brilliant. I love it. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Drift. Amazing product, has some like really interesting functionality, and really a pioneer in the chat space. And I know that they do a lot of other things now too. So that is just huge. And they're a great marketing org. Like, I've been exposed to a lot of their marketing and a lot of their content. Phenomenal marketing org. And they really, like, you can go to their site and see that they really eat their own dog food in terms of like really intuitive and powerful like messaging experiences.
Yeah,
that's super cool.
Well, you hit on two things there, right? One is innovation, and they continue to innovate very aggressively on that. We just announced with them back about a month ago new capabilities called Site Concierge, which gives you a much more richer experience in terms of feeding up content, understanding sort of where you've been in your journey, and then feeding you up the next content that would be appropriate to help you in that journey, help you book meetings. So it's sort of a plethora of tools now to engage more richly and more personalized on the site. And then they're also innovating in what they call Bionic Chatbots, which is really taking the historical experience of how you build chatbots and really leveraging AI much more powerfully to make that easier, more efficient, and more capable in terms of what it does. So great innovation. And as you said, we found very early on with them that we shared sort of this ethos and this mindset around, one, wanting to be best in class at using our own product, but two, a culture around sharing that with buyers and really providing buyers with the best practices, the insights, the perspectives to sort of challenge their thinking on the way that you market and sell. Yeah. And as you said, they've created great content. I think SalesLoft has some phenomenal content, and now we're just trying to leverage that together to deliver even better content to people so that we can really educate and inform and challenge people's thinking on the way you go about approaching these things and be thought provoking.
Yeah. No, it's so awesome. And I can tell that this is going to be a good episode because the time is just flying by so quickly. It's like, so we've already been here for 40 minutes. Cool. Well, I want to be sensitive to your time. Just a couple more things before the lightning round.
Yep.
You have impressed everybody that's listening to this right now. Like, people are like, oh my goodness, Randy Littleson, where did you come from? So thank you for that. Let's talk about some of the things that are maybe not going so well or some of the big challenges. Like, where are you guys? What keeps you up in other words?
Yeah. Well, I think like everybody in business nowadays, right? It's that predictable, consistent growth. We're growing, which is a good thing. But, you know, we'd like it to be easier, as everybody would. So more predictable, consistent growth.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that I would say is, I think we've covered, but just to summarize, right? We've got to continue to educate the market in terms of the breadth of our capabilities. We were very successful many years ago in creating what was then called the sales engagement space, right? And really being a thought leader and a leader in that, helping the XDR organization, sales development in particular, go about executing their part of the business from a pipeline. And as hopefully I've demonstrated, the breadth of our capabilities is so much broader, right? We've got deal management, we've got forecasting, we've got conversational intelligence, the ability to record and do transcripts and understand the calls. And all of that ties back together to that prioritization engine, that ability to take in the signals, prioritize, and drive action off of. So we've got a lot of work to do to continue to educate the market on that breadth of capability and the business value that we can deliver and the scale that we can deliver serving a company like IBM with over 30,000 sellers. So those would be the two big things, right? Consistent, predictable growth, which I think all SaaS companies over the last year or so, we'd like more of that, even though we are growing and that's positive. We just want more faster. And then continuing to get that message out of the breadth and the business value that we can deliver is probably the two things that are first and foremost in my mind.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I think That's on a lot of people's mind for sure. Yeah. What have been some of your, like, what have been your big growth drivers historically? Has it been mostly like a sales driven motion, or is it more of like the free trial to like more of a product led, or is it events really that's driving things or that's driven things?
Yeah, it varies by the business that I've been in. I've always believed that the best way to consistent predictable growth is not one thing.
Yeah.
It is a combination of things working together. And, you know, we're having this discussion now because we want more faster, right? Relative to our growth in that. And, you know, what I keep preaching to everybody is it's never one silver bullet. It's lots of knobs and levers getting better and better and better. It's the marketing engine getting better, which is digital and events and so on. It's the sales engine getting better in terms of how they prospect and follow up and everything. It's enabling and activating a partner channel can be very, very important there. So it's a combination of a lot of things constantly optimized, but designed and built with scale in mind.
Yeah.
And that's what I found. Every business is slightly different. Some are skewed a little bit more one direction or another, but I've never found that there's a silver bullet. It's all of those things working together. Because if you think about that buying committee and you think about the buying journey that they go on, there's lots of touch points in there. So you can't be single threaded, right? You can't just be an events oriented. You just can't be product led. It just can't. I think it's a combination of things thoughtfully orchestrated throughout that buying journey that ultimately make a difference.
100%. Well, hey, I'm super excited for you. I'm super impressed by you, as well as Sales Loft and Drift. This has been an amazing conversation. And I can't wait personally to learn more about Site Concierge and Bionic Chatbots. So I'm going to be going to dig into that right after this episode. We'll also leave links, to those things, and some of the other things that we talked about in the show notes. But I know you're a busy man, so let's get to the lightning round and then we can get you out of here.
Sounds good.
All right. Question number one, if you were to start a side hustle, what side hustle would that be?
It'd probably be something in sports. I'm an avid sports fan, but something in coaching, teaching, winning and losing, competition, team dynamics, leadership. Something in that capacity. I love sports and I think there's applications that we learn in business that can be applied in other areas of life. So, I don't have a specific, but generally speaking, it would be something in that direction.
Nice. I like it. All right. And then, top three books, authors, influencers, podcasts, even any information source that has made an impact on you.
You know, what's interesting about that is I don't have like a go-to one, but what I do have is I use a product called Feedly, which actually grabbed like RSS feeds and that from a lot of different sources. So you can search on topics or themes or whatever. And I use that as my net that I cast, that I bring in lots of stuff. And I can do keywords, I can do competitors, I can do industry trends, I can do follow marketing stuff or business leadership, lots of different things. Cool. It's more of a general purpose, but it brings in topics of interest. And I cast that broad net, and then that allows me to hone in on things of particular interest. So that's sort of the way that I go about doing it.
Oh, very cool. And then third is, how do you avoid burnout, and how do you help your team to avoid getting burned out?
I think the most important thing is to be able to set boundaries and have an on-off switch. As we've all worked in a more remote or hybrid environment, it's blurred the lines between our personal and our professional lives. And I think it requires a lot of discipline on your part in order to be able to shut it off. And I think that's important that individually we've got that. And I think as leaders that you embrace that and support that. Let people take their personal time. Let people shut it off when they want to and then support that. Don't cross over that line and ask them to, you know, turn it back on when it's a noted time to turn it off. And build a relationship with people so that they feel comfortable telling you, hey, I need to step aside for the next hour or two and, you know, do whatever, or I need to shut it off at, you know, 4:30 today or whatever that may be. Support it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And it's not easy for me, but one thing that I've learned, so historically I've been like, hey, I'm the CEO. I need to be the first one in and the last one out kind of a thing. But ever since the pandemic, I've been a little bit more vocal with my team. Like I'm a little fried right now. Like I need to take an hour or two. And I found that they have reciprocated and started saying that to me sometimes too.
Yeah, I think the way that you lead sets an example, right? Yeah, it's interesting. I tend to get up very early. So I would send emails, you know, I would engage very early. And I've had people tell me, and I have to be proactive now and say, look, that is not an expectation, right? Yeah. That's just the hours that I choose to work, but that you are no under obligation. And being proactive and, okay, less, right? Yeah. It's helpful.
Yeah, I love it. Well, hey, this has been one of the best episodes of the season, if not the best for sure. I really, really appreciate it. I learned some things here. I was inspired. For everybody listening, if you learned anything or picked up a little bit of inspiration from this episode, please share it with a friend or drop us a 5-star review wherever you get your pod. We always appreciate and read every single one of those. Randy, for everybody that is listening that wants to learn more about you or SalesLoft or Drift, where would you direct them?
Well, for me personally, you can check me out on LinkedIn. I try to post there on a somewhat regular basis around specifically things that we're doing at SalesLoft and that. Would love for people to check out salesloft.com. I hope that whether you're a customer or not, you can learn from some of the content that we put out. I think we try very hard to be thought-provoking, educational, informative in that. Because there's a lot going on in this world. It's changing very, very quick. And I think we owe it and have a part to play in helping to educate and inform. So, salesloft.com in particular, our blog and what we do on LinkedIn, those are two or three places that I think you can learn a lot and hopefully learn, and engage in the dialogue as well.
Yeah. And the podcast is good too. I watched the recent episode of the No Nonsense Sales podcast with Aaron Evans from Flow State. Very good content.
Yeah. And I think that all goes to the spirit of trying to be educational, insightful, thoughtful, and that, and really contribute to the dialogue that's going on in the industry. That's certainly a goal that we have.
Love that. Practicing what you're preaching. I dig it. Cool. Well, Randy, stay on the line 1 second. We're just going to close up. But for everybody else, that was another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO, and we'll see you next time. And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us here today. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at revenuedrivencmo.com. That's revenuedrivencmo.com. And hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours. Even if you're already a client, if you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. And that's just because you're a listener of this podcast. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision.